Evening, folks. Welcome back to Trinity Tim's podcast. This week's episode is our Christmas special and is titled Park the Bus in honour of Jim Goodwin's tactical genius from yesterday's door draw at Tannadice. As usual, I'm joined by Joe from Video Cells and James from the Celtic blog. And we have a packed show for you tonight. I suppose, look, we'll dive in straight away, guys, and start the discussion on yesterday's game because that's kind of fresh in the memory from what happened yesterday. So, Joe, if you fire away and give us your thoughts on the game against Dundee United yesterday and how you felt that panned out.
Frustrating. 90 lost minutes. We knew before the game, Tannadice is one of the tightest pitches in Scotland. It's better than a plastic pitch, but it's very tight. When it's windy, when it's open, there's all sorts of things there. And I really think you need to change your game plan a bit. The game plan was certainly changed by a number of injuries, but defenders all did well, Welsh, Scales and Ralston, but we had very, very little from the wings, if anything. So at Hampden, we had five wingers. Forrest was injured, out for 6 weeks. Coon out for, we don't know, hopefully not too long. And all of a sudden, Yang and Palmer are back in the mix. And we know Rodgers has tried his best. He's dumped most of Mark Lyle's inspired signings. He's tried to get a tune out of those two, but we watched them for the first half of last season and they were very poor. They're just not at the races. Palmer came up with some great stats last season. He had a purple patch, but that blew over. And he might be a number 10. He might be an MLS attacking midfielder or a shadow 10. He is not a Celtic left winger. So Yang's stats are horrendous. I think he's got two goals or two assists in 18 months. He's not played that much, but he's had enough opportunities. You'd expect anyone playing a number of games for Celtic to come up with those sort of numbers. Stephen Welsh put him through brilliantly in the first half yesterday and just blew it. And Palmer, he cuts inside all the time. That's his game. Playing him on the left, defenders know he's never going to hit the byline. He's always inside. And Dundee United, the centre park colour. No complaints whatsoever with Jim Goodwin's tactics. He's entitled to do whatever he likes. He did it with Aberdeen not so long ago. He came within 2 minutes or 2 or 3 minutes, and then Callum McGregor came up with a goal. So he left up. His Aberdeen demise was pretty soon after that. The same thing happened when, I think it was a Mickey Beale revolution, visited a few days later. He would do whatever the hell he likes. Celtic knew what was in front of them. The squad, we've got a good squad of 16, 17. If you take four out of that, and you've got to go down to positions 20, 21, you're bringing in Yang and Palmer, then they're a good deal short. We've still got 11 better players than Dundee United, maybe 9 players better than Dundee United. We should have won, but it's on the manager and players. Rodgers knew after the cup final there'd be a reaction. Players were down at Ali Pali, but they were back Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They knew in advance the conditions. The injuries knocked them a bit, but main illness was in defence. Defence was solid and should have more. The only sort of positive was Ida and Kyogo. I think there might be some potential there. When you're limited in winger options, rather than playing two wingers, it might be better to play two strikers and one winger because the wing options are just not up to it. We've got Maeda, and if Coon's not available, there's no one else really there. Yang or Palmer's not going to do it. So I would think the percentage game, analysis, whatever, you're going to be far more effective with Ida and Kyogo playing together with Maeda than you are with either of them plus two wingers. But frustrating conditions, lots of things involved. Hopefully two back-to-back wins coming up and we can start to look towards Ibrox. But a little reminder, anyone getting complacent, then we still have to work very hard and our squad is 16, 17 strong. An ideal world, I'm sure most managers would tell you, I want 22 competent players. I want 22 players that come in. We don't have that. We've got 17 or 18 that can come in. Beyond that, it's a bit of a stretch. So plenty to think about. A few days for Rodgers. I don't think it would have shocked me. My brother-in-law in St. Johnstone is the most demanding. That's a couple of days to get things back together, and I'm sure he will.
Yeah. I mean, the loss of Coon, that left a huge hole. You could feel that with there was just zero penetration on the wings. And obviously, Maeda's Maeda, and you know what you get from him. But we just, I think we, yesterday was a perfect example of how much we actually need Coon and how we rely on him now for goals and for penetration. He was sorely missed yesterday. And at the risk of sounding repetitive, we still had the Hatate conundrum. So what are your thoughts on it, James? I felt that again, he was just lacking in his game again. This just seems to be a continuous process at the moment. He doesn't seem to be getting out of this bad run of form.
No, he does not. I think we thought that he might get dropped for his own good yesterday, but no, still in the team. First things first, I am not going to give Jim Goodwin any praise whatsoever for that yesterday. I don't think there's any merit to what he did yesterday. It's the most basic tactic in football is just to put 11 men in your own penalty box and keep them there for the whole game. Doesn't require any degree of tactical skill or sophistication at all. And it is your job to break it down. But as I said in the piece I put up earlier, the problem wasn't so much losing Coon. It's losing Coon and Forrest at the same time. Because that leaves us only Yang as an option. And Yang's an old-fashioned winger. His job is to cross the ball into the penalty area. But when there's 11 men in the penalty area, that negates the whole purpose of ever having Yang in the team.
Yep.
And if Forrest had been there yesterday and Forrest had played, we'd have had a better result and we'd have won the game. I'm absolutely convinced of that. Because Forrest at least is able to cut inside the box, run with the ball, get shots on target. Joe's right about Yang. Yang's stats are dreadful. I don't know how many more chances that guy's going to get. Hopefully not very many more. I think there's probably a player there, but it does not fit the style that Rodgers wants to play at all. Not even close. And Palmer is one of the most frustrating players I have ever watched, because there is definitely a player there and a player who could fit into your style, because as Joe says, he cuts inside a lot with the ball. But he just doesn't do it enough. And we can't... I mean, he's our Hadji, if you'll pardon me for bringing one of their players into this. He'll have one good game in 5, maybe 10, and that's not good enough for us at all. It's just not going to do. Yeah. Manager's got a lot of work ahead of him. But again, this is the hand the manager's been dealt. He's only had a couple of transfer windows to fix the disaster of last summer. Yeah. And he's done a reasonably good job. He was never going to get it all done during this summer. So, you know, January's going to be important. And all the people who are saying that we need a left-back and a central midfielder, I think it's obvious that we need somebody out wide. We need at least one signing on the wing. And preferably somebody who can play left and right.
Yeah, I would agree with that, 100%. It's looking at Palma yesterday when he came on, there was just zero penetration there. There was nothing, no end product. He literally, from my point of view, contributed nothing to the game. And look, Yang was maybe fractionally better while he was on, but neither of them just didn't contribute. In terms of the midfield did their job, but it was very hard to break down that, you know, that parking the bus tactic. It's just, and look, it was very windy there. That wasn't helping either. And look, we can't blame the conditions, but I suppose the concern is we're not in a great run of form at the moment. Would we shock yesterday down to the fact that we had injuries and we were missing key players? Or would we link it to the fact that we're just not on a good run of form at the moment? What do you think, Joe?
The form isn't great, but I wouldn't read too much into it. Partly it's horrible conditions. Tannadice and Pittodrie have been utterly miserable. That's Scotland. You've got to play the card that you're dealt with. I'm not too overly concerned. If we can get back towards playing 45 minutes or 90 minutes, I'm pretty confident things will be okay. I don't think there's a form slump. I don't think players are majorly off the boil. I read some nonsense about Kyoko as time's up and various things. Keep putting the ball across the box to Kyoko and he'll do damage. You don't score that goal against Hibs a couple of weeks ago and turn into Sebo overnight. So Kyogo has got it. If he gets the right, if he gets the right support, things will be fine. Hatate's got it. He's off the boil, but there's options there. We do have five good midfielders, and the manager's got to get the blend and the mix right. If he gets that right, with Maeda, Kun coming back is a big. It's impossible to get away from yesterday's match without talking about a guy that never played. It's natural that every team needs their best player. He's been our best player this year, and because he was missing in other circumstances, that contributed to the draw. But I've no great concerns. I would think against Motherwell, Motherwell and St Johnstone, we'll probably win both matches by at least two, probably three, and possibly more goals. It doesn't really say much about us because we know we're not up against much, but it gets things back. But a bit more regular, and then we've got Ibrox, and then we've got two home games after that. So we've got four of the next five games at home. The one away from home is absolutely massive, and it'll impact far more than any other fixture. But the manager can be thinking about how we can use the squad over that, get things right so that we're as strong as possible going to Ibrox, and get something from Ibrox, a draw or a win. And then get two matches, home matches after that to consolidate on things. And then you can start to think a little bit towards the Champions League. But he's got a very good squad. A few of them are a little bit off the boil. It's nothing major. It's not requiring massive surgery. And if you can get a couple of players in. Well, let's not forget, before Mark Lowell came in, Ange Postecoglou was in charge alongside his agent. And he had three signings lined up for 31st of December. That is a benchmark. It is not a notoriously difficult window. It's as difficult as any other window. It's as difficult as you want to make it. Rodgers will know the weaknesses in the squad. He'll know the areas he wants to strengthen. He's got his own guy in, the football doctor. He should be working. He's been working with Celtic since the summertime. It was interesting, Rodgers flagging up going to Dublin on Tuesday for to see Dermot Desmond. I reckon that's given him his place to show that he's central to things. I don't really think he needed to go over and plead a case. I think what Rodgers has done since he came back is convinced Dermot Desmond to let him go on with it. But show a bit of respect, a bit of due regard to Dermot Desmond over there. That's also a nod towards I'm expecting things to happen in the transfer window. So it's up to Michael Nicholson to execute them. And we could do with them coming in at the start of the window rather than at the end of the window. So we're all watching. Matt Lowell is no longer in the building. Let's hope the lessons have been learned and it's quality over projects. Yeah. The players come in earlier rather than later. We trust the manager and we expect him to get things. I was going to say back on board. It's not doesn't need to be back on board, but back in form. Get us playing the way we were. The Aberdeen semi-final and Leipzig spoiled us. They were above the benchmark, but getting back to a good level of entertainment, good attacking football and converting chances, that's what I'm looking for. Hopefully we can see that in the next couple of matches. I don't think there's any need for anyone to be looking out cracked crests at this stage.
Yeah, well, I think if there were positives to take from the game yesterday, I thought McCollum played well and he had two good chances. And he could have put those away. He was only inches away on both occasions. I think two shots on target was worrying. That was a worrying stat in the game. But overall, it just got, you know, as it wore on, you just got that feeling it was going to be one of those days. You just couldn't see it happening. And I think by about, you know, the 80th minute, I was talking to the guys at my CSC and I was just saying, I just don't see this happening. No matter what we do now, you're just not going to break these guys down. And that's the way it transpired. But look, it is what it is. It's a nil-all draw. We take it. Keith Jackson reckons there's a chink of light there for the Ibrox side. Whoop, whoop. So, you know, he reckons if they can beat us at Ibrox, that, you know, blows the title race wide open again. And I suppose they got, Joe was only commenting it on his vlog lately that they got an £8 million new package, is it? Is that the transfer kitty for January?
The telltale sign is the Daily Record, The Sun, STV, BBC haven't touched their £8 million investment. So,
well, they don't want to touch it either because they know exactly what it represents. Yeah. It's money to keep the lights on. That's all it is. And have you seen the price of the shares? Have you seen the price they're selling shares for? 1 pence shares. We've got something like, I can't remember how many, hundreds of millions of 1 pence shares now.
If Dave Kennedy get 1 pence for the shares, he'd be doing cartwheels. The shares are utterly worthless.
1 pence.
Why would anyone splash out big money to buy 12-15% in a worthless company? It gives you no influence whatsoever. Dave King's the biggest shareholder. Doesn't get near any decision making. So leave them to their fantasies. I saw one side.
Media doesn't want to touch this with a 20-foot pole. They would rather pretend this isn't happening.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, austerity kicks in next week when the January transfer window opens. They sold a lot of players for very little in the summer. And
they lied about it. When they were briefing the media, they completely lied about it.
If there's any offers at all, they'll be all over them in January. That's for another day.
I think we've all touched on it in our blogs at one stage or another that the shares aren't worth... I think at this point, toilet roll is worth more. because if you go buy a packet of toilet roll and the amount of sheets in a packet of toilet roll and work it out, I think you're paying more than a penny for a sheet of toilet roll.
Yeah.
So look, guys, we'll wrap it up on the game. I think there isn't a whole pile more that you can say in it because it wasn't a very exciting game. And
I'll say one thing about the game, right?
No,
both of you have said pretty much what Jackson said this morning, which I pulled Jackson up for. He said that we're in a form slump. We're in a performance slump, not a form slump. The performances have went down slightly, but the form has been pretty good. I mean, I keep on reading references to drawing 3 games in a row. It fucking drives me nuts. This absolutely drives me nuts. This is the worst spin I've ever seen. One of those games was a tough European away fixture. This one here was a tough SPL away fixture and less than ideal conditions with major injury problems in the team. And the other one was a cup final that we won, although you would never know that.
No.
So I don't know what really 3 draws in a row. Seriously, it just pisses me.
Look, the whole footballing world has come to a standstill as a result of that penalty decision. So, games were stopped out in Spain. People were missing surgeries. It was off the scale, the fallout from this particular penalty incident. I think the whole footballing world is in shock. Absolute shock. as a result. So, look, guys, we move on. Our next subject to tackle today is our favourite guy, Tom English. And he was really out in force last week. First of all, on Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it. But his comments in light of this penalty decision or lack of a penalty decision or whatever they were looking for. This guy is he just has one agenda, and that is to rise Celtic supporters. But he spends more time making a complete and utter twat of himself in this process, because you would think that the guy would have learned by now when he starts these Twitter spats, because the Celtic fans just come back at him and they absolutely destroy him. And he still doesn't learn. And he still came back after Willie Collum announced that it was an unacceptable mistake. He still came back with, Celtic fans form an orderly queue. I mean, honest to God, I'm ashamed to be Irish. Because of that guy. He gives me a bad name. He genuinely gives me a bad name. And I can't wrap my head around the way this guy operates. For want of a better word, it's just utterly stupid. That's 2 words, but I had 1 word. I can't say it. So, Joe, do you want to open up on this? Because you're a Tom English expert.
I'll let James go first.
James.
I'll pass the ball. I'll let James go first, then I'll finish him off afterwards.
Yeah. You'll deliver the coup de grace. James. Yeah, let's hear your opinion on it.
Tom English is frustrating for a number of reasons. He's frustrating to me in the same way that Ewan Murray is occasionally extremely frustrating. Because Ewan Murray is actually an outstanding journalist and a great writer. And when he goes in his wee mad Twitter rants against Celtic and Celtic fans and the signing policy and how outgunned every other team in Scotland is, well, and giving us any allowances in Europe when we lose to teams that we're financially outgunned against, it pisses me off because he is a smarter guy than that and he knows better than that. And he's basically acting as a troll. And that's how Tom English behaves at times. And Tom English used to be a serious journalist and he used to be a pretty good journalist. He's a pretty smart guy and he's a good writer. And I used to like reading the guy a lot, right? But Tom English has been losing credibility and losing his mind for a few years now. And I remember when he did his interview with Chris Boyd, where they spent most of the time talking about Chris Boyd's dug. And he got slagged about it after Graeme Spears and tried to pretend that it was a bit of serious journalism. It was not serious journalism. It was fanboy gushing over one of his heroes. That's all it was. Absolutely ludicrous. And at that point, Tom English ceased to be a serious journalist when he's trying to defend an interview like that. And English's problem is that he's circling that weird drain that a lot of journalists seem to go down these days, where he thinks there is a difference between something that pisses people off and something that's genuinely controversial. Now, genuinely controversial opinion is an opinion that flies in the face of the majority opinion, but has some maybe discursive merit to it. But trolling is a different thing entirely, and you don't need any level of skill for it at all. I mean, people like Keevans excel at it. They don't even try and make serious arguments any longer. They just say whatever they think will generate the most discussion and outrage, and that's what Tom English does these days. And that, you cease to be a serious journalist when you do stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's also this tendency that English has to take everything that comes out of the Ibrox as absolute truth. And the situation that I've written about a couple of times was his whole dodgy dossier, his behaviour during that incredibly bizarre series of events, for which he got pulled up by Spears and by Michael Stewart, and he had a Twitter debate with the two of them where they were accusing him of having said that the club across the city had said that threats had been issued to somebody or other. And English denied ever having said that. And Graeme Spears said, well, you did say it. You did an interview with one of the Ibrox directors and you're the one who used the phrase. It's in your article. And he flatly denied it and they had a big major fallout about it. But his behaviour all the way through that was absolutely lamentable. Every single time they made an allegation, he would defend them. He would say, that sounds like it's got merit. That has to be taken seriously. Then when the dodgy dossier came out, he read it and liked what was in it and thought that there was something there and it was worth a proper discussion. Once the clubs got to see it, they were like, what the hell is this? Peter Law memorably called it embarrassing and tossed it aside without even further discussion. I mean, English's default position is just to support everything they say, no matter how stupid, no matter how ridiculous, no matter how distended from reality. And he does it all the time. For him to have a go at Celtic fans the other day was just English at his best. There was no need for that at all. He just decided he was going to try and antagonise as many people as possible. I mean, how are you supposed to take somebody who does that seriously? That's not serious journalist behaving with responsibility. That's just a dick. Try to be a dick. That's all that is.
Well, that's what I should have said, to be fair, but I was a bit more polite than that.
Then the Ian Maxwell interview, right? The Ian Maxwell interview. It ends up by talking about how Ian Maxwell has had a go at the press for sensationalising the penalty and turning it into a week-long unnecessary debate. And English is saying, yeah, I agree with that. And I'm like, wait, what? All of a sudden, you don't want any part of it. We should have left this on the first day the decision was made. Who are you kidding? And unless you changed profession in the last 6 hours, you're a member of the media that he's criticising. He's criticising you. Don't pretend this was nothing to do with you. And that's what he does. He's got a tendency to do that as well. He'll get involved in a major argument, major debate. He'll stir the soup as much as possible. And then when it all explodes, he'll stand there and be like, oh, this has got nothing to do with me.
Back off and nothing to do with
him. So cowardly. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
But I mean, that is his nature.
It's strange because he used to be a serious journalist. Yeah, and he isn't any longer.
That's it. He just wants to antagonize Celtic fans. I mean, they're his target. We, as Celtic fans, have a target painted on our back, you know, with Tom English. And he has no interest in actually doing any serious or balanced journalism when it comes to Celtic Football Club. No interest. And the behavior throughout the week, the Twitter spats are just, it's childish and it's immature. And it just, like you said, James, it doesn't know. I mean, it's just embarrassing. Joe, let rip.
He is not a serious journalist. He has never been a serious journalist. He has never written anything of consequence that's worth looking at. he was at the Sunday Times as a number two, the Scottish Sunday Times, a number two in the mid to late 90s. Went back to Ireland for egg chasing. They rumbled him and he was bombed out of that. And he returned to Scotland and he turned up at the desk of Scotland on Sunday. He followed on from Kevin McCarra, top journalist.
Yes.
Jonathan Northcroft, top journalist. Graham Spears, I'll not say too much. He's decent and think and produces some thought-provoking stuff, but he's not the same category as McCarra or Jonathan Northcroft.
Well, that's a pretty specific category, to be honest.
And then they turned to Tom English. He has got no contacts in Scottish football. He's got no understanding of football. And Scotland on Sunday went off a cliff. Newspapers were going downhill anyway. He put his foot down. He's got no knowledge of the game. He's curried some contacts at Hearts. He caught some stories out of Hearts. Wow, who cares? Edinburgh's a rugby city. The Scots, mm-hmm. Scotsman publications, football is a bit trivial. It's second place to them. And through having an Irish accent, through his criticism of Celtic on occasional appearances in Radio Scotland, that was a box-ticking exercise, and that got him a more regular gig there. And cottoning on to that, he played up to it, slaughtered Celtic every opportunity, slaughtered Neil Lennon, blah, blah, blah. He was still singing the praises of Craig White, even when James Traynor, the Daily Record, had ditched him. So he's at Radio, he's at BBC Scotland. His salary is entirely dependent on folk paying the licence fee. Folk know what to do with that. He's got no ability. During the lockdown, he got friendly with Scott Gardner of Les Cali Thistle. He was feeding him stories regularly about the atrocity that was carried out, the miscarriage of justice. Strangely, with Inverness Cali Thistle's recent demise from the top division, first division, now in championship, now into first division, Tom English couldn't care less for Inverness Cali Thistle. He's not investigating his old pal Scott Gardner. He's got no knowledge of football, he's got no respect amongst his peers. Apart from Ewan Murray at The Guardian, no one in the media business has any time for him. They know he's of very limited talent. He likes to make a lot of noise. We forgot the Shane Warren incident, which sort of sums the guy up. Famous Australian sportsman died. Celtic Express. And English couldn't wait to jump in with both feet to slag Celtic off.
I remember it well.
In newspapers, if you try to put that through, a sub-editor or an editor that says, wait a minute, forget it. But on Twitter, it's instant. He couldn't hold back in that. Anything at all to put the boot into anything Celtic will go for. The BBC was forced into apologising a couple of weeks later. And then last June, when Brendan Rodgers was getting appointed, English goes on to an Irish podcast using his BBC equipment. That's a microphone, nothing else. And he was slaughtering Brendan Rodgers. Brendan Rodgers was a failure. He was washed up. He was going back to Celtic because nobody wanted him. He was pining for the Spurs job at Ange Postecoglou. Thankfully, I'll give praise to Celtic in this one instance. On the back of that, BBC Scotland haven't been invited back to Celtic Park. They've got their contracts. They're entitled to access before and after matches, but the normal Friday pre-match preview BBC Scotland don't get invited along to that. For whatever reason, well, it must just be that box-ticking reason, because English is absolutely nothing to BBC content. He spends most of his time online. That's the only place he's got any relevance. If he tweets something about rugby, nobody cares. Nobody's interested. He tweets something slagging off Celtic, anything at all, and he knows he'll get a reaction, and that gives him a warm glow because he thinks he's getting it right up those Celtic supporters. We're laughing at him. His demise isn't too far away. If you're still paying the licence fee, have a serious think about it. You're paying for Tom English's salary. You're paying for Kenny McIntyre, Alistair Lamont, Neil McCann, James Lewis, Derek Ferguson, Corey Loy. Who's that idiot goalkeeper that threw the ball? Cammy Bell. That's what you're paying for. So take it or leave it. It doesn't bother me. He's a figure of fun, ridicule. Once or twice a month, he'll do a story about how stupid he is. But no, James, I'll disagree with you. He's got no credibility. He wasn't once a good journalist. He might write some stuff on egg chasing. Nobody in Scotland cares about it. And so what? We know our football.
This is his second love, don't forget.
English is like a 12, 13-year-old that's just discovered his mobile phone. And he gets attention for slagging off Celtic. So good luck to him. Hopefully Tom gets to celebrate Celtic's 55th title in May. And we'll see how what direction his future career takes. If it's not with the BBC, it's with no one, because no commercial organisation would touch him, because he's not going to add anything to their output. He's not going to add clicks, he's not going to add viewers, and that's why he's left at the BBC. So I've curtailed myself, I've kept the handbrake on. That's a nice summary of English. Succulent Tam, the man that crashed circulation at Scotland on Sunday.
That's a nice name.
And BBC Scotland's bad enough. Tom English ticks a few boxes, House Paddy, and hopefully suffering for as long as possible with Celtic's continuing success. Amen.
Correct.
Well, I mean, I can't really follow on from both summations there. What can I say? I keep it brief, right? So back in my, we'd say my blogging infancy, I wrote an article Joe's aware of called "Why Does Tom English, an Irishman, Hate Celtic So Much and Why Does He Feign His Love for Sevco?" That was in January of 2022, and that was, I think that particular blog is what brought me to where I am now, or here, where I sit now, right? But as I was in my blogging infancy at the time, I was in my Twitter infancy as well, because I never had any interest in Twitter, but I had to set up an account when I started blogging. So I followed Tom English, and, you know, because I wanted to see what he was saying on Twitter. And as soon as I published that article, me being a guy who just had my blog going onto Celtic News Now, nowhere else, a couple of days later, I was blocked from Tom English on his Twitter account. So he's a very tender guy, you know. He's very soft guy, obviously. You know, I hit a nerve, and he obviously read what I wrote. You know, despite the fact I was only, you know, starting out as a blogger, it hit a nerve, and he blocked me off. He blocked me off Twitter. So I always thank Tom English for getting me to where I am now, anyway, because Joe read that article and then Joe contacted me, and the rest is history, as you know, as we said in the first blog. But as an Irishman, I'm embarrassed. He embarrasses me. And every time I go on and I see his once he starts antagonizing Celtic fans, or trying to antagonize Celtic fans on Twitter, it's cringe. It's cringeworthy. And the thing is, we slaughter him. We absolutely slaughter him. The comments that come back, and Joe, to be fair to you, you don't hold back when you do articles with the comments at the bottom, and I love it. I absolutely love those articles because Joe really lets rip, and he puts every comment that the Celtic fans made on especially last week when he did the one about forming an orderly queue. The follow-up to that was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But
I deleted my own tweet on that. My initial tweet on that was, let's just say, it was very aggressively angry. Right. And I think it was up for about 2 minutes, and I was like, nah, that's the wrong response. That's coming down.
Yeah.
And I thought, nah, I'm going to think it. I'm going to I'll spend a day ruminating this, and then I'll write about it. I'll do it properly. But, oh, dear God, man.
There's a huge selection when he puts up his nonsense. Celtic supporters are all over it from left, right and centre.
Yeah.
And there's some very, very smart guys out there. One shout out for the guy that's probably the best guy on Twitter, Lint. Lint had an absolutely outstanding week last week. The way he puts together and compares comments and video clips is out of this world.
Absolutely.
I read in Kerrydale Street a few weeks or months ago, somebody suggesting that Lint has done a better job in the SFA than Michael Nicholson. It's a pretty low benchmark, but Lint has been outstanding. Every discrepancy, every example of double standards, he's been all over it very quickly. And guys like Tom English or Lint, it's Champions League against the Lowland League.
Absolutely.
He's miles and miles at his depth. He can pat himself on the back and think he's the smartest man in BBC Radio Scotland. But guys like Lint and
that's a pretty low bar you're setting there. I don't know.
Yeah. But guys like Lint and dozens of others can highlight how out of touch and how compromised and pathetic Tom English is. So, unfortunately, Tom, that's that nasty social media thing. It's the thing that you live off because you get no contacts in the real world. You don't go for lunch with people. You don't go for drinks with people. You don't have phone calls with people. You troll across Twitter, and on that level playing field, you're a laughing stock.
Yeah, well, a shout out to Lint, definitely. And he's more than welcome to come on to our podcast anytime.
Absolutely.
So we, if you're listening to us at any point, Lint, yeah, you're more than welcome to come on and share your comments with us. So look, guys, we'll move on. I think we need to put the penalty story to bed from last week because, you know, as I said, the shockwaves around the world are still, the reverberations are still going. You know, so, I mean, the footballing world is just in absolute shock after what happened last week. And but I think we need to put it to bed. So we need to, as Celtic supporters and bloggers, talk about incidents down through the years that were absolutely blatantly, you know, off the scale ridiculous that went against us. You know, because we've seen evidence last week as how the Ibrox side reacts if something doesn't go their way. And, you know, this, when you look at this decision, okay, you could see why the officials in the VAR room would miss it, okay?
Of course.
You could see, you know, I mean, his foot was barely on the line. And yes, I looked up the rules, and the rules say that if your foot's on the line, your foot is technically in the penalty box. So it should be a penalty. But I suppose that kind of made me wonder, like, if the ball's on the line, then why isn't it a goal? You know, so it's a strange rule. I think, like, your foot's either outside the box or it's inside the box. If it's on the line, it's not in the box. But anyway, that's just my opinion. It's neither here nor there. But, James, what's your opinion on the whole of last week? Because to me, just one point I'll make to you is, like, everything else that went on in that game was entirely ignored. Everything. Yeah. And this penalty decision took precedence over absolutely everything, which was utterly ridiculous because there were so many decisions that actually went against us in the game, which we didn't crow about. Yeah. And I wrote an article on it during the week and I said, you're never going to crow when you're the winners. You know, and the only reason that the Ibrox side crows the way they do is when they lose.
Yeah.
So, look, what's your opinion on it? I mean, it's probably one of the most utterly ridiculous weeks in Scottish football that I've seen in a long, long time.
Well, we talked about it last week, and we were only a couple of days into the insanity. And what I thought was interesting was that Brendan, when he got interviewed on Friday after the SFA had clarified it, Brendan basically said what we said. You know, the theory that Tom English and his ilk didn't even want to consider, which is that he thought that the whistle had been blown when it initially happened, and that therefore the free kicks outside the box and what happens after that's irrelevant. And I thought that, and we all thought that. So, of course, you can see why the guys in the VAR room would have been like, no, it's fine. You've blown a whistle, so it's fine. So, to me, it's a marginal decision. That's all it is. All this talk about it being a stone wall and all that, I don't think it is. I think it's a marginal decision. If the referee blows a whistle before the two players are in the box, then it's no penalty. So it's ridiculous. The whole last week was an embarrassing one for the Scottish media. And this is why people like English are now trying to say, oh, yeah, you know, there wouldn't have been all this for Ori if it would have been two other teams. And see, that is such utter garbage as well. English tried that one at the weekend. Oh, it's only caused all this controversy because it's these two teams. Nah, not true at all. If the decision had gone against the club from Ibrox, it did not matter who the opposition was. They'd have pulled it apart for a full week. Had the decision been in favour of Celtic, it wouldn't have mattered who the opposition was. They'd have pulled it apart for the full week. There were people in the media the day looking at the Rio Hatate tackle yesterday and asking if it would just possibly deserve another red card. I mean, this is the level they work at. It's constant with these guys. So, I mean, there was nothing really unexpected about the last week, as embarrassing as it was, because it's almost as soon as the game was done, we were all like, oh, well, I guess there's got to be some controversy or the penalty. And my reaction was good, because I like it when they're complaining. I like it when they're bitching. Yeah. And I hope that it's a incontrovertible decision that somehow hasn't went their way, because I actually enjoy seeing how hit up they get and how pissed off they get, and the foot stamping fury in the Ibrox fan forums, and we're going to march on Hampden and burn the place down. Come on, but seriously, guys. Ian Maxwell actually said something similar to that the other day. Before he did the English interview, when he gave his initial response to it, he said, a lot of clubs talk about going to war with the SFA, but none ever does. It all gets solved reasonably and responsibly with a conversation. He says people should, you know, cease all this talk about going to war with the SFA, because no one ever does it. All it does is shows the Ibrox club up to be weak anyway. Yeah. Because they talk about digging into things and stuff, and then they have to accept the explanation just like everybody else.
Yeah, why was Frank Connor and, you know, the two VARs, why were they thrown under the bus? I mean,
well, we don't know that they were. You see, this is another assumption, right? We don't know that they were, because I think there was an incident earlier on in the season which involved us, where there was a presumption that the VAR guys had been demoted, or the VAR guys and the officials had been demoted. And in actual fact, they were just on the rotation, and they were back in the line of duty the following week. Connor's got the game. Am I right in saying that Connor's got the game on Wednesday?
He's the assistant referee on Thursday at Kilmarnock, Aberdeen.
Oh, it's Kilmarnock, Aberdeen, I thought.
And then on Sunday, he's the assistant referee at Celtic and Motherwell. So there is no demotion, absolutely no. There's a rota. There's six top-flight matches. There's six referees, six VARs, six assistant VARs, and not every VAR gets a gig every week. So they missed out at the weekend. Muir isn't getting anything on the 26th, but he's back on the 29th. So it let them all think, oh, yeah, look at that. That's them being demoted. Aye. But it never happens. Celtic Sports been guilty.
Media won't have that.
Stephen McLean, after the 2015 Scottish Cup semi-final, he didn't get a game the following weekend. Oh, look at that. He's been demoted. Nonsense. They're back again. You've got a job for life. It's the way it operates, but it's an easy headline. But there are more match officials than there are matches, so some of them are always missing out. So it's non-story time again.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess there seem to be differing opinions, though, between, say, Willie Collum on his VAR show and Ian Maxwell on his interview with Tom English. Ian Maxwell seemed like Collum seemed to be more submissive in terms of the way that he was handling the situation, whereas Maxwell didn't. But was that more a case of Maxwell being wound up by Tom English and having to get defensive? What do you think, Joe?
There's a little bit in that, but I think a bigger issue to come out of this is Willie Collum is becoming more and more remote and distanced from the rank and file match officials. They are not used to being hung out to dry. From somebody that knows somebody, Willie Collins stepped over a line where the way he criticised Muir and Connor, he could have been a bit more diplomatic, but Willie Collins has one interest in life, and that's Willie Collins. He is without doubt the worst referee in Scottish football this century. The guy has got no understanding of the game, no rapport with footballers. It's all about him. Absolute contempt the way he speaks to players, the way he deals with them. And now that he's in this job, he is only wanting to promote himself. He's got Chris Boyd, Keith Jackson and others saying what a great job he's doing. He's a breath of fresh air. It's great transparency. Willie's doing it. Willie Collins is a product of all this refereeing. Willie Collins knows the weaknesses of all the referees. Willie Collins watched Alan Muir deny Celtic a penalty at Fir Park. He was smart enough to notice that Dazen Maeda put the ball into the net with his arm. He didn't notice that the reason that Dazen Maeda was on the deck was because he was fouled. Willie Collins watched all that and put Alan Muir in charge of VAR for the cup final. And then when Alan Muir messes up, Willie Collins washes his hands of him. So Willie Collins, I don't think there's much affinity with Willie Collins to begin with. I don't think he's quite one of the lads in the refereeing circuit. And he better be very careful because the other referees have got no time for him. And again, these guys are all contractors. They're not employed by the SFA. They don't have any real obligations. They're going to be well paid, but there's four paydays for them over the Christmas period. That was the weekend past. The 26th, 29th and 2nd of January. But Willie Collins, the SFA are dependent on their goodwill. They would have put themselves forward for those shifts in advance, but goodwill is going to be thin in the ground. And if Willie Collins likes to keep on promoting himself to the detriment of match officials, he might find the match officials aren't doing him any favours and aren't quite as available as he'd like them to be. So, again, Willie Collins, he's enjoying the spotlight. He's on with Gordon Duncan. There's plenty of fun banter. Willie's a great lad after all. And he should be a bit more diplomatic, rein himself in. He should be supporting referees, helping referees, rather than slagging them off when Willie Collins is the guy at the centre of the problems. He's a product of it. And he decided who was getting those appointments at Hampden. And they mucked up. Willie Collins, nothing to do with me. It's all the VAR fault. So there's plenty of mileage in this. They finally get around to announcing the match officials for Thursday's matches late on Monday afternoon. So there must have been some shuffling going on, switching guys around. And we wait to see what they come up with for the 2nd of January. Was it Nick Walsh has got the Edinburgh Derby on Thursday? Most folk would think he's most likely to get the Glasgow Derby. Getting both those fixtures within a week isn't ideal, but they're not in an ideal situation. No. I think Don Robertson's possibly the other. I thought for a while David Dickinson was going to get it, but he's at Fir Park, I think. He's got one of their games, either St Mirren away or Motherwell away. He did our game on Sunday, so I think he's out of contention. And my voice is out. Shut up,
water, go. Do you think, though, that we're going to get... It's inevitable before the season is out that there's going to be a controversial decision that goes against us. Are we going to get the same kind of mea culpas and apologies from Willie Collins in that instance? No, we're not.
Joking on me.
Michael Nicholson won't open his mouth. Michael, when Brendan Rodgers calls out John Beaton as a Michael Nicholson says nothing. The instance at the game in the cup final, serious attacks on Kun Maeda by Jeff Day and Leon Balogun. Michael Nicholson says nothing. Broken glass appears in the Celtic penalty box at Ibrox at half-time. Mysteriously, while the Ibrox groundsmen are on the pitch, Michael Nicholson says nothing. So the SFA know they can do anything at all. And we've had plenty of bad decisions against us this season. No penalty against Kilmarnock. No penalty for us at the open game against Kilmarnock. No penalty for us at Fir Park. Various incidents in the cup final all went against us. We managed to overcome it. There'll come a day, there'll be another Tyne Castle. There'll be a day where decisions go against us. We don't win. Celtic supporters will be outraged. And Michael Nicholson will say SFA. It's the Celtic way. It's been that way since July 2012. They will not say anything to upset the SFA. And that's just part of the package Celtic supporters have for Scottish football with the current management of the club. That's executive management, not football management. When it gets pushed, Brendan Rodgers will call it out, but it has to go to extremes.
Yeah. Okay, look, we'll sort of wrap up this segment with, we've each got to give a decision down through the years, which we'd rate as one of the worst we've ever seen go against us. So, James, in your opinion, I mean, because of the outcry from the Ibrox side all of last week, I mean, over what we'd say was a marginal decision, what would you say, I mean, stands out to you down through the years? I mean, there's a litany, but is there anyone in particular that stands out to you?
There are two that actually stand out a mile. George Cadet's chopped off goal against Rangers at the time was an absolute atrocity. And the League Cup final offside with John Hartson's one of the worst decisions you'll ever witness.
He was a mile onside in that game, yeah.
One of the worst decisions you'll ever witness. But there have been loads of them over the years. Remind me, guys, a man nuts or did Paul Lambert get sent off at Ibrox?
When he got his jaw broken.
Lying on the pitch, getting treated for a broken jaw.
No. You're nuts. No, he never. He picked up a bad injury. He was sliding in. Albert's knee hit off his face and he was off injured. He didn't get sent off.
He didn't get sent off.
Did he get a card though?
I don't think so. I think he might have been booked earlier on in the match, but his teeth were flying across the television screen. That was the end of the game for him. He went off injured. So yeah. that's one less atrocity, but there's plenty to select from.
Anyone's in particular for you, Joe?
There are loads of them.
I'll pick out one. I think it was 2006. Paul Le Guin's one and only visit from Celtic at Ibrox. Celtic are leading 1-0, playing into the Copeland Road stand. The ball gets knocked aside. Neil Lennon takes a touch round Stephen Smith. It was Gravison had scored the opener for Celtic.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
I think Stephen Smith's still mentally scarred from getting out the road of it. But before half time, Lennon gets sived down the box in front of the Copeland Road stand. Kenny Clark didn't want to know. He knew the consequences, giving Celtic a penalty to go 2-0 up at half time. I think we were 17 points ahead going into that match in December, and Kenny Clark did not want to know, so we never got the penalty. I think him, Danny, Google him if you like, he might have equalised in the second half. We left Ibrox only 17 points clear, but that was an outrage. Another belter was Craig Thompson a few years later when Tony Mowbray went to Ibrox. I'm trying to think if Mowbray get two games at Ibrox or just the one. I think he get two games at Ibrox. The first game, Sean Maloney get chopped twice and again did not want to know. Given Celtic, I think eventually gave Celtic a penalty at the third Stonewaller, and then Mark Wilson get booked for a dive. It should have been another penalty in the second half, but there's tons and tons of them. I think yeah. There's a 7-minute video highlighting some of them. And that's just the games at Ibrox. So there's plenty of content out there. You can choose whatever. You can go back as far as you want, or you can go back to last season. The Silva penalty last season, when John Beaton initially booked him for diving and then decided that it should be a penalty. There's one. Kyogo's disallowed goal for the squinty lines this season, et cetera, et cetera. But don't let that disrupt the narrative. Celtic have been getting away with murder for the last couple of seasons, and it's all those VAR officials that are appointed from dubious sources. Yeah. So we'll treat it the contempt it deserves. Keep our eyes open. Celtic won't say anything, but we can keep our eyes open and put the content on the blogs and folk buy into it, folk recognise it. That's why we're all sitting here tonight with successful independent blogs.
Exactly. Well, for me, correct me if I'm wrong in this one. I'm a little bit vague on it, but Jim McCluskey was the ref. Would have been around 97, I think. Paul Lambert again was cleaned out by Andre Kanchelskis.
Stephen Mahey
was cleaned out by Andre Kanchelskis, yes.
Yep.
And it was a blatant penalty. And Alan Stubbs remonstrated with McCluskey, and he was told, and Stubbs last year in an interview actually said that he was told straight up by McCluskey that as long as I'm a referee, you will never get a penalty at Ibrox, no matter what. And I mean, that kind of just sums it up, really, doesn't it? You know, and I mean, what reason would Stubbs have to make that up if it didn't happen? You know, and it fits the narrative of the way that we've been screwed over all down through the years. But, you know,
yeah, you have to look at how many of these guys have ended up on the sash bash circuit.
What was that?
You only have to look at how many of these guys have ended up on the sash bash circuit to realize how bad it is.
Yeah. But to be told, all right,
question that.
Yeah, it was absolutely blatant. So look, like you say, guys, we could spend a night on this one. We could dedicate a full podcast to it. But we'll move on. So touching on Rogers' meeting, we did touch on it a bit earlier on inadvertently, but touching on Rogers' meeting with Dermot Desmond in Dublin and the potential transfers of the upcoming window, do we think that this meeting is a preemptive strike by Rogers to kind of match what Ange Postecoglou did back in 2020? You know, coming into 2022.
I'd be utterly amazed if we've got three signings lined up for 31st of December. It'll be better than last summer where we went into January. Well, it was maybe about the 10th or 12th that we signed Kuhn. Unfortunately, dental surgery, and we saw very little of him. And then who knows the process it ended up with Adam Ida, but I suspect other forwards, other options were put to Brendan Rodgers. He knocked them back. And again, I mean, it's sliding doors. If Norwich hadn't signed Sidney Van Hooijdonk, they might well have held on to Adam Ida. And we might have signed Sidney Van Hooijdonk. He might have done an Adam Ida, or he might have done very little for Celtic. So you really can't be waiting the last couple of days. Business needs to be done early. I don't think anything major was decided in Dublin last week. I think Rodgers had his plans. He's put them to the Celtic board. The Celtic board will have put them to Dermot Desmond to see if he's okay with it. And a bit of a ceremonial visit. We'll all go over to Dublin, talk things over. I'll mention it at the media conference. And that puts the onus on Nicholson to deliver. So I don't think anything major was decided. I don't think there's any change of policy. Rogers won his plans well in advance. The draw with Dundee United confirms that the squad needs strengthening. Kieran Tierney's been dropped into the mix again. That throws more light on the left-back conundrum. So we'll see what tumbles out, but I think Rogers is on the front foot. He's not wanting to let things slip. They've got almost a once-in-a-generation chance of doing something in the Champions League. So Rodgers won't be letting that pass him by. He knows he's got a squad capable of beating Young Boys of Berne. That puts you into the playoff. And you should go into the playoff with a 50-50 shout. Depends who you get in the draw. But there's a £10 million prize for getting through into the last 16. So Rodgers is a football man. Rodgers is ambitious. He wants to push things as far as possible, and we'll see if others at Celtic are on the same wavelength.
James, do you think there's any veracity in the Tierney story? Do you think there's anything there? Do you think maybe that Rodgers went over to say, look, to Desmond, we need to finance this and get it over the line? It's not me. Look, my personal opinion is it's not a road we should be going down, I don't think, anyway, but that's just my opinion. What's yours, Alan?
No, I agree with that. I don't see any merit in the Tierney idea at all. I think everybody would regret it. I think the club would regret it. He would regret it. The manager would regret it. The fans would definitely regret it. The ones who've been clamoring for it the loudest would regret it the most, because we certainly wouldn't be getting back the same player who left. If he was the same player who left, we wouldn't stand a chance of getting him in the first place. At the point where he left, he only wanted to play against the best players and challenge himself in the best leagues that he could. And if Tierney is capable of doing that, or he thinks he's capable of doing that, we don't have any chance of getting him, because there will be offers for him and he'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
I think probably things got rubber stamped in Dublin. I think that Rodgers has probably had an idea of what he needs and what he wants for a while. And I think it was just a case of good earlier saying these are the targets. These are the targets still within the budget. Let's get it done as quickly as possible. Oh, sorry, guys.
No worries.
I mean, look,
we're lucky you're actually on. You know, you've had a couple of rough days, so we'll take that into account. You're a martyr, as we'd say here in Ireland. You're a martyr to the cause. So, yeah. look, to be fair, the Tierney rumors. While the name Tierney is nice and the thought of Tierney is nice, I think he's been so injury prone anyway while he's been at Arsenal, and he's had an awful run of injuries while he's been there. That's not good. We're taking on a player who is injury prone. Outside of that fact, when he played for us prior to going to Arsenal, he was a player who was targeted all the time. All the time. I mean, the hammer throwers were out for him in every game. I remember one game against Motherwell back in, I think it was 2017, where he got an unmerciful tackle where he got a boot into the knee. And I don't think the Motherwell player was even booked for it. But he was lucky he didn't actually break his knee or break his, you know, do serious damage. But he always seemed to be targeted in games because of the level of skill that he had as a player. And I don't think that's going to change if he did come back. I think, you know, in a game like yesterday's, you know, one of those ridiculously dour games where they're parking the bus, they're the kinds of games where people would target him, you know? Yeah. And I just don't know. There's thousands of Celtic fans out there who think it's a good fit. I just don't. I think we're kind of trying to relive history with him. And I just don't think that's going to happen. You know, we might see him arrive in January, and he might surprise us all. But look, I don't see it happening. But you don't think either, Joe, that it was a case of, you know, it was just a customary meet and greet.
Yeah, I don't think there's any big business to be done. I don't think Rodgers had to convince Dermot Desmond into things. Rodgers will know his remit. He would have some ideas, and they'd be in place and just talk things through, person to person, eye contact, get it through. But Nicholson and Chris Mackay, they were along for the journey. I suspect they didn't have much input into it, and they were there as witnesses to it. So things will be well in place, and it's now up to Nicholson to deliver.
Yeah, 100%. We'll, I suppose, watch this space as we usually do going into January. The most notoriously hard transfer window for Celtic, always.
Here's a question, though, right? Is it really going to be Nicholson's job to get it done this time, or is that what Tisdale's there for? Is he there to go and get the transfer business done, or is it still going to come down to the chief executive?
Nicholson will sign it off. It's ultimately on Nicholson. So Tisdale, he'll know the budgets and what area they're in, but the final negotiations will be down to Nicholson to complete.
Okay, I think you're catching whatever James has, Joe.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll park the whole transfer chat. I'm sure we're going to have plenty to talk about in January in regards to that anyway. So we'll move on to our final segment, which is our weekly look over the fence. So James, all things Ibrox, they must have really been celebrating at the weekend that they they got it down from 11 to 9. They must have been thinking, look, all our Christmases have come up once. We have a chance now if we beat them at Ibrox. I mean, that game again at Ibrox against Dundee, what a load of... Oh, I watched it and I probably lost an hour and a half or nearly 2 hours of my life doing so. Again, I suppose we have to just take a look at these things to see what it is that we're up against. But
yeah,
I mean, it was...
That's the value in it is.
It was brutal again.
Yeah. I mean, if Dundee take that chance late in the game, then the whole tenor of the conversation this weekend is entirely different. And they're back in crisis and they're back wondering whether they should have stuck with the manager. And they are now stuck with the guy. I mean, I think he could probably, at this point, I think he could probably survive a defeat at Ibrox. It would make his life very difficult, but I think he could probably survive it. Because now they have, I mean, if they go into Jang anyway, then they have to keep him to the end of the season. So, I find it hard to believe that he's still there. And I find it hard to believe that a lot of people in the media believe some of the nonsense that they're talking. I mean, Jackson this morning, that it's a chink of light. Forget about it, man. Forget about it. I mean, during the mid-season slump last season, right, we had a seven-point lead. And I just don't see us going through a spell like that this season. I just don't see us going through a spell where we throw away six, seven, 8 points in the space of 3 weeks or whatever it was.
Yeah, well, if we get back to full fitness...
If we get back to full fitness and form, we will just blow teams away again.
Yeah.
And I think even in the worst-case scenario, right, where we leave Ibrox without a point, I don't think that will happen. But even in the worst-case scenario where we do, I'd still be pretty confident taking a six-point lead into the new year. Just based on what has to happen in January. Yeah. Based on the fact that we know the team will get stronger in January and we've gave ourselves a good foundation for the second half of the season. I don't feel any nerves at all about dropping points at Dundee. I don't feel any nerves about the possibility of dropping points at Ibrox. I think we're too far ahead. I think we're far too good a team this season. And I think that once we hit form again, we'll go on another one of the 10, 15 game runs where we'll just be untouchable. We'll look a streets ahead of everybody else. And I don't think they're capable of going on one of their runs anyway. See, there are two elements to what has to happen. It's not enough for them to improve. We have to completely collapse. And those two things aren't going to happen. I don't think they're good enough.
Fact. Anybody, you know, see the article during the week in the Record about Dele Alli?
Oh, ridiculous. I mean, this is the thing with them. That, I mean, which party we are in downsizing, don't they understand? I mean, they're selling their shares for 1 pence each just to keep the lights on.
Yeah.
And they think they're going to go and sign players like Dele Alli. They're mentally ill.
Come Cuckoo Land. Joe, what do you think?
I thought we'd come up with Twat of the Week, and I was going to give it to one of our fellow podders. Over on the Rangers Rabble, some guy came up with the insight that Maeda's outstanding goal in the League Cup final should never have stood. So you, me and everyone else watched Maeda take three outstanding touches. After a couple of days of deep digging on the instructions of Phil Clement, this rocket came up with the news that Maeda had actually went in and studded Leon Balogun in the ankle to gain possession. So that's a difficult one to beat. I mean, McCoist, Barry Ferguson, Chris Boyd, Neil McCann, they're all predictable, but it was good to get something refreshing, a different angle on it. So there's not much you can complain about with the own goal. Thank you, Nico Raskin. They came up with this bizarre notion that Kuhn had wiped out Dio Manzi for his third goal, whereas the reality was Dio Manzi tried to wipe out Kuhn, failed, fell on his backside, and up at Kuhn as the ball hit the back of the net. So this guy on the Rangers Rabble decided to dig a bit deeper, and on closer inspection, Daizen Maeda wiped out Leon Balogun, and that was the reason why he scored that outstanding goal at Hampden. So whoever you are, congratulations. On Friday, you had your 15 minutes of fame. You were trending everywhere as you explained why Maeda's goal should have been disallowed, because one of your mates on the group chat had spotted it. So there you go.
Yeah, that's that's a pretty good one, Joe. I'd be inclined to, I'm guessing if you saw this guy actually turned around and said at the end that, the fact that Maeda studded the Ibrox player and they had the penalty denied as well, that the game should have been replayed, yeah? Because that's what they were all looking for. So obviously he was demanding that as well, I assume, yeah?
At the very least. But I think we can park it. It's still fermenting over there. They'll be stewing on it for a long time. We've got 1-1-9, and I suspect there'll be at least one, probably two more before the end of the season. And but they'll go on about how that was a turning point. That just everything conspired against them that day, from Alan Muir, who we all know, from John Beaton, who we all know, and fourth official Stephen McLean. But that was all over. That was all knocked out by the presence of Frank, the sinister Frank Connor, as
with an Irish surname.
Frank Connor was more powerful than John Beaton, Alan Muir, and Stephen McLean in the League Cup final. Facts! Exclamation mark.
Absolutely. I have to admit, and I didn't touch on this in the synopsis of the Dundee United game, though. But I did really enjoy Chris Sutton's comments about the wind being 55 miles an hour yesterday. Did you hear that? The number 55. he really got it in there. He's very quick off the mark, to be fair to Sutton, isn't he?
That was a good one.
Yeah, enjoyed that one. So look, we'll wrap it up with our usual, guys. I think you've already said what your twat of the week is, Joe. James, who's your Ibrox twat of the week?
Well, use a famous film quote, there can be only one. And if Tom English does not win twat of the week this week, then the competition has no meaning.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think we covered that fairly well. I think Barry Ferguson's in with a shout after his article after the cup final, because apparently they found their balls again. So, you know, and he's been crying out for balls for a long, long time. And according to him in his article at the start of the week last week, they finally found their balls again. So, you know, everybody's back in the good books of Barry Ferguson now that they're ballsy. So he's my twat of the week anyway. But look, as usual, we're gone a bit over time. We tend to go a bit over time every week, which is no bad thing because people like what we talk about anyway, judging by the reaction we got last week. So I think we'll wrap it up for this week, guys. In terms of our followers, folks, like and subscribe. Keep them coming. We got a great response to last week's article, we all talk in articles because we're bloggers. I meant podcast. But to be fair, yeah, thanks, folks, for the support we got in the last podcast. It really, really, really performed well. So keep them coming. I think we're definitely building up an audience. People like what we talk about, and we got to keep it fresh, guys. So we'll aim for next Monday night again, and we'll probably have plenty to talk about. Joe will be hosting again next week. And till then, a very, very Merry Christmas, guys. I hope you have a good one, and you get to spend some quality time with your family over the next few days. And keep well, and make sure you have plenty of tipples over the coming days. All right?
What 1 minute. This Christmas is a great time for lots of people, but equally, a lot of people, it's a difficult time for them. They're on their own. There's lots of problems. There's loads of issues out there. But just remember, you're not Tom English. Bear that in mind. No matter how bad things might feel, no matter what challenges you've got in life, when you wake up in the morning, you're not Tom English. Here's Tom.
And on that note, I'm going red here, so good luck, folks. See you next week.